connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
Hello and welcome to Talk Surfer Show, a whirlwind ride through whatever we want. I am your host, Galen. I am in the newsroom today because we have unprecedented winter weather here. I am going to go to our correspondent in the field, Matt.
Snow! You want to make a snowman? You want to come make a snowman with me? There's so much snow out here. You want to make a snowman?
I'm getting reports, of course, that actually, you can make a snowman.
We could actually make a snow any gender.
That is true.
Snow woman, snow binary.
Snown binary.
Snown binary. Hi, I'm Snown binary. Hacker extraordinaire.
My favorite
Wachowski character.
I love in New Vegas when you go to Snown and they're like, we here believe the gender's a spectrum.
True, though. So, yeah, in case you haven't noticed, or snowdist, if you will, we're a bit late on this because it did snow like 12 inches, maybe more than a foot.
I think probably 13 inches.
13 inches. That's an
unlucky number.
Which is
a baker's foot.
Ooh, yeah, baker's foot. They do have bigger than average feet.
Yeah.
You know what they say about bakers with bigger than average feet?
They got bigger than average bread.
Yes, exactly. So, we've got, you know, some news, some things to discuss, some fun stuff, some what we've been doing in the lately. But first, we have a huge, huge thing that was dropped a few weeks ago that we never talked about, because I was waiting for this episode, honestly.
Yeah.
Which is a new trailer for friend of the show, Pow World.
Yeah, please welcome back returning champion, Pow World.
Yeah, so this is our new Trailer Blazes, I think we're calling it, or we called it. Not sure, I don't remember, and frankly, I don't want to remember.
I'll be in my trailer.
Yes, I'll be in my Trailblazer, my Chevy, of course. And we're going to be watching this. I haven't seen it. You haven't seen it?
I've not seen it.
And
I am so excited.
Yeah, we have the audio muted for the trailer, so you'll just hear us giving our play-by-play commentary.
Yes. So we've got kind of a Corviknight big bird. Got the logo. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're holding on to. Oh, okay. There's the guns. There's a squirrel with a gun.
Yeah, I like that the grass starter has a gun this time.
There's some like astral chain sliding. Oh,
okay,
yeah,
we got a Pokeball.
There's the Pokeball.
Farming.
Okay.
I do like the idea of farming with the water type. We got a rocket ship.
Oh my god, and the
fusion?
Pokemon fusing into an egg
Oh my god, it's like actual fusion. The electric and the water dinosaur became an electric dinosaur. Also,
Kyogre.
Now
we've got a big beauty shot. Okay.
Yes, it's this asshole. He's got a chain gun.
A big fucking My Neighbor Totoro. Oh my god,
why is it glitching?
What the fuck?
What?
What?
Also, nice Murkrow. Holy shit.
There's a guy.
Oh no.
They're making the. Oh my god, there was a guy.
Oh my god, the boat just ate another Pokemon.
What the fuck? They're in like a secret base and like.
There's too much.
What the fuck?
I really hope this is like a fake game that like.
This.
Okay, no, that's literally just Zora. Zoroark.
Mm-hmm. This. Oh my god. This feels
help.
This feels like a tech bro in Dubai is trying to launder money, and so he's hiring.
Oh no. Oh no. I hope there aren't NFTs in this. Oh no. I legitimately want to play this game now.
Yeah.
Just because it's so wild. So like that was like a gritty like Source Engine, like evil hospital lab.
Yeah, with a main bad guy looking dude who's a plague doctor.
Yeah,
looks like the SCP guy.
Yeah. Was I wonder if the like assembly worker line from the first trailer was also part of that villain's plan and not a commentary on capitalism.
Yeah.
And endless growth in a world where there's literal monsters you can capture.
I I mean, we see bits of that factory, but it doesn't seem, I don't think it indicates that it's Mr. Face. Mr. Face.
From Nickelodeon. Yes. Really went downhill after the Nick Jr. days.
When they started adding guns to the series. Yeah, guns are still an active part of this, and your not Pokemon can wield guns.
Which is pretty great, if I might say.
Yeah. Oh my god. This,
I can't get over how in one of the scenes in the evil lab, there's like the main character doing like, you know, a wall hug stealth maneuver type thing. An explosion happens, and one of the pals, the Palimon, gets blown and knocked against the wall.
Yeah.
And it like bounces off like a rag doll.
And like you said, it is like exactly like sourced level textures. Like it is more quote unquote realistic than anything else that has been shown.
It reminds me of the like Jabroni Mike Detective Pikachu videos. Where it's just like, I'll never take a bribe. Pikachu, you're off the force.
God, it's, oh man, I so want this to be a real video game that comes out, and I don't care if it's good, I want it.
I don't care if it's good, I expect it to be meh at best. It's just, these trailers have just been so much. I need to go back and listen to it again after this is done, just in case there was dialogue. Because what if there was dialogue?
Oh my god, what if there was dialogue that we missed?
Yeah, what if there was dialogue from Mr. Face?
So like, okay, actual hypothesis time. I figure it's going to basically be a survival crafting thing in the vein, probably closer in the vein to like Factorio. Based entirely off of the fact that there's a rocket in it.
Yeah.
Actually, no, probably more like Subnautica. But I assume that there's going to be, like, excursions into bases.
Yeah.
And that's where the weird source-looking bases are.
I'm expecting it to be, like, a Breath-like, as we are calling them nowadays.
Yeah.
Where the overworld has you catching monsters, and that's also where, like, you can build a base that builds factories. And the first trailer had like the hamster wheels that generated power, and that's probably a thing.
You know, there were ethical like uses of the pals, well, instead
were
all, of...
Yeah, there were also like Joe Exotic type cages holding Pokemon in bins, and the player walks through them like, these are all my captures. But yeah, and then I'm assuming, yeah, there's going to be some sort of like excursion dungeon base. Probably closer to, like, Genshin.
Yeah. Yeah, Genshin's probably a good point of reference.
Yeah. The question is, will it be better than Sonic of the Wild?
I feel like the default answer is going to be yes, but that's really just because Sonic is in Sonic of the Wild, and that's always kind of a handicap.
I feel like the default answer is... So yeah, that's Pal World. Fucking Pal World. Gotta love it. Like it, love it, gotta have it. That's me right now.
God. Okay. Hey, speaking of fusion.
Oh, God.
Why don't we talk about something that's a fusion of our interests?
I'm trying to figure out where this falls into. Let's see. Hold on, let me think. Trying to come up with something funny.
It's okay, take your time.
Is it the fact that one of the new Rivals of Aether characters is a sweaty monkey and he's the avatar?
You got it.
Yes, shout outs to Hodan, of course, Hodan these nuts, the one of the new four Rivals of Aether characters who has the powers of all four elements and is also a sweaty monkey. Literally has a DK and a Blanca color scheme right out the gate. It's like, I can't improve on that. I like to make reference colors for the characters, because you can make custom colors in that game. But how do I improve on DK and Blanca?
How do you improve on perfection?
Exactly. You can't. It's impossible. Unless you're God.
Well, I mean, arguably, the Rivals devs.
True, though.
So...
I want to still talk about some news.
Yeah, let's get into the news.
So the big news, what I thought you were going to say with Fusion, was the acquisitions recently. Let's start with the smaller one, which is Sony buying Bungie. Admittedly, I mean, so Bungie has been really just doing Destiny recently.
Yep.
And that's seemingly going well for them.
It's, yeah, it's got its dedicated players, and it's, you know, it's free.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I feel like this makes sense from the standpoint of just wanting to make money, I guess, buying a studio so that you then have the profits from that studio.
Yeah.
Destiny has a lot of players, obviously. I don't know what the difference in player base between PS4 or 5 versus Xbox One Series X is. You know, the Microsoft versus Sony.
I don't imagine that Destiny is going to become exclusive or anything.
Yeah.
But from my understanding, they've definitely not, Wink, been working on a new project for a while.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, it's a little questionable if that's going to be... Bungie says that, you know, oh, we're retaining our independence. We're not going to let them boss us around. But, like, that's not how buying works.
I will say, Sony is usually pretty good with their like, first-party studios.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Media Molecule, Santa Monica. Is FromSoft a first-party Sony, like, company now? Or is it just that they funded Bloodborne and Demon's Souls?
I think they are independents, but they funded those two, so those two were exclusive.
Right, yeah. But, like, or Insomniac, that's another one. But no, yeah, there's a lot of studios that Sony has on payroll that, like, still make good games, and, like, a lot of them are also cross-platform, though I think that was a more recent thing, and not as much with the Xbox as it is Switch and PC.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, the big question is just, like, how much of a monopoly does this make? That's sort of the big thing. It's like, even though the company could be kind of off, like off the reins, so to speak, it still means that they have a larger market share, which can lead down the line to more worries, you know, more sort of closed ecosystems, more having a higher market share means you kind of control more of the output. And that's also things that can change under the tenure of different CEOs and shareholders.
Yeah, this is basically, like, not a problem yet, could be a problem in the future.
Yeah, Bungie, it's also, like, Bungie is not, like, Fox, you know?
Yeah.
Disney buying Fox was huge because Fox is such a significant portion of many media industries, both film and TV and just other, like, network. But,
Bungie is a historic company, but it is not, like... It's an $8.6 billion acquisition. That's not nothing.
Yeah.
But, like, in terms of acquisition...
Yeah, I heard that.
Acquisition.
Yes.
It's not as big as the other acquisition.
Which, yeah, we'll go ahead and say it.
Yeah.
The Microsoft buying Actabliz.
Yeah.
Actabliz King.
Yes. you actually have to upgrade Actabliz King from Actabliz Bro, and Actabliz Poke, but you have to have a high friendship.
That's really hard to do.
Yeah, especially with ABK.
Yeah. Akatsuki Blitzkampf? Holy shit, they're bringing that back? I know, like, three people who would be so excited for that. Give me my ch-ch-ch-chestal! I mean, it's Actabliz King. You know, people forget about King, but King did... They do make a lot of money on the mobile market.
Yeah.
Activision is, like, I think the highest gross... No, not highest. It's, like, second highest grossing video game company behind, like, Take-Two, which I think is still the biggest.
Yeah.
With Rockstar.
With Rockstar's money printing machine.
Yeah.
That also has gameplay features.
Yep, like eating cans... Oh, wait, no, that's the one that they didn't care about. I was going to say eating cans of beans, but that's not as big as the one where you drive cars and fly cars and shoot cars. The car game.
Now, when you say shoot cars, do you mean that you shoot a gun at a car or you shoot a car at a person?
Yes. Okay. So... Yeah, I mean, Activision, there's not much else to say about it. Like, they make a ton of video games. Blizzard is Blizzard. They make a few games, some of which are okay. The big thing, though, is, you know, the shitstorm of Blizzard, which we tried not to talk about a whole lot because it's very depressing and, like...
actively triggering. Yes. And...
but I think there's pretty much, like, hints that, like, as soon as they're able to fire Bobby Kotick legally, they're going to do so.
Yeah.
And Phil Spencer, as much as a CEO of a video game division of a major tech company can have a good head on their shoulders, it seems like Phil Spencer is on that side.
Yeah, like, that's honestly the biggest thing that I was surprised by, is that, like, from my understanding, Microsoft is not bad about internal culture, at least... not Activision Blizzard bad.
Yeah.
Not that genre of bad. And, like, Phil Spencer, it's... I would not expect a CEO of a company, or of a division of a big, big company, the world's biggest, I believe, to, like, be giddy about an acquisition. But, like, hearing him talk about it, or reading him talk about it, he's like, holy crap, Activision has, like, so many great IPs that I'm so excited we can do things with. And it's like, this is so weirdly... that's so weirdly, like, gamer-forward.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, like, you know, we are excited to have a new member of the Microsoft family. Sorry.
Yeah.
Family.
It's, I mean, like, yeah, Activision has a lot of IPs. They have Tony Hawk. Imagine if we got a new Tony Hawk game.
God. Please. Oh, you know what?
I mean... TPS 1 and 2 remaster did well, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, it did really well. It did so well that the company who made it got immediately liquidated.
Yeah, immediately liquidated. Yeah, that's the thing, is like, are we going to get the companies that were, like, pulled out of doing good things, like Toys for Bob, back into make things good things?
I fucking hope so.
Yeah.
Like
Actibliz was looking like EA... you know, like, closing down studios because they make them make a game that they didn't want to make, and that they didn't have the talent for, or the infrastructure, or the engine, or the money, or the...
like, it sold $1 billion instead of $1.2 billion, so they liquidate the entire company. Okay, like, the thing is that, baseline, this is obviously generally pretty bad.
Yes.
Like, it is the world's biggest company absorbing another gigantic fucking company.
Yes.
But, like...
there was a SEC filing, or whatever.
And, you know what,
Or FTC? I don't remember which one it is that does mergers. I think it was
SEC that is doing mergers. But, like, here's the thing. I can be upset about that, but, like, I think the way that, like, Ross Scott put it in a video of his is, like, at some point, it's like a peasant being mad at the king. Like, what are you gonna do? He's the king. Like, yeah, I don't like that Microsoft is becoming a monopoly that's so ubiquitous with tech that it doesn't have to innovate. And so ubiquitous with everything else that, like, it doesn't actively have to do anything. It just is big. And so it controls, like, all of our lives. But, like, you know, I can't do anything about that.
I don't know what point I'm trying to make with this, but you just made me think of, like, we should improve video games somewhat. Yet you play video games. Curious. I am very intelligent.
Basically.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, at my core, it's like, this is a bad thing. But, like, as someone who plays and enjoys video games, I feel like Microsoft might genuinely have a better use of the IPs than Actibliz has. At the very least, the IPs that have fallen out of favor.
Yes.
So,
and,
like,
if they can, like, improve the culture at those companies, I think that's one of the bigger things.
Yeah. The biggest, most ideal thing is that the culture of ABK is... just fucking rebuilt from the ground up.
Can they, like, make it safe?
Yeah. Can they make it a...
yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, like, making, like, new good games or rebringing back old IPs, I think that's secondary for me for can they improve the company as a whole to then make it worth supporting.
I also... here's another thing. I hope that this doesn't, like, somehow undermine the SEC, or not the FTC filing. Like, I hope that somehow, I hope that there isn't some fucking, like, cup and ball game where it's like, oh, well, now that Microsoft owns ABK, we can't actually litigate any of these claims or anything. Like, yeah. I really hope that is not the end result. I really hope that the government investigation still goes through and everyone who deserves to be in prison is now in prison.
At the very least, there are going to be still a lot of eyes on the management of ActiBliz as a subsidiary. You know, like, you know, you'll still have Jason Schreier sitting there like, all right, who's listed under their executives here?
Yeah.
You know.
Shout out to Jason Schreier.
Yep. One of the best investigative journalists in video gaming.
Kind of one of the only, unfortunately. Yeah. Not the only, but like.
Yeah. But that actually brings me to, I think, the next segment I want to do, which is just some quick content shout outs. There's two things in particular I just want to mention that are kind of already front runners for best longest.
Yeah.
One of these is, of course, Line Goes Up, the NFT problem.
Yep.
Which is Dan Olson's takedown on pretty much every topic regarding NFTs.
Yeah. It's so good. It is like, okay, to explain NFTs, we have to explain crypto. To explain crypto, we have to explain, like, the web.
The 2008 subprime mortgage crisis.
Oh, God, such a good opening.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it... I think it was General Ironicus, I think, who, made a great point that effectively, like, Dan Olson's greatest strength is, like, he does not waste any time in the middle, but, like, the entire video, every time he does a really long-form thing, it leads up to, like, one fucking mic drop of a closer.
Yeah.
That, like, sums up... he has his thesis statement last, and it is always the best, like, build-up to payoff.
Yes. I love... One of my favorite things is that he did bring up the implications on game design of NFTs and gaming, because... I feel like a lot of people understand that it's a stupid idea, but not many people articulate why it's bad for game design as a whole, and also, of course, why it doesn't really make sense when there's already games that do, like, collectibles and limited items and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And even those are kind of iffy at best.
We've already had secondary markets. They've existed since 2010 with fucking the Steam Marketplace.
Yeah, they've existed since 1998 or so with Magic the Gathering.
Okay, that's true. Digital online, yes. Secondary markets for video games.
Yes. So that's that. Not much else to say. Great video. Don't want to go too much into it because then we'd be talking about NFTs again. And
I do want to.
Oh,
you did bring up. You did bring up Tony Hawk.
Oh,
okay. I'm going to keep this sub 1 minute. Okay. Tony Hawk is doing an NFT.
Oh,
now,
no.
I'm very sad about that. Very genuinely sad. What I hope happened, because what I think happens to a lot of people who do NFTs, like your Jack Blacks or your Brie Larson.
Wait, Jack Black did an NFT?
Did a Tenacious D NFT.
Oh, no.
I think basically what happens is that they don't understand the tech, their publishers don't understand the tech, but their publishers or their
publicist?
The publicist, that's it. Their publicists are like, hey, this NFT thing is popping off, and it can make you money, apparently. And so they get in touch with some stupid tech bros like, yeah, man, NFTs are great. They make you money. And so they're like, yeah, sure, I'll do a thing to make money. And so, like I'm not saying don't be mad at them. Bully your heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Don't send death threats to your heroes. But, like, bully your heroes and be like, hey, NFTs suck. You shouldn't do this. This is stupid. And... you know, like, I hope that he joins the multiple people who, like, basically the moment that people are like, hey, what the fuck, is like, oh, I didn't realize they were this bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, I'm sad. I am disappointed in Tony. I also feel like, you know, the unfortunate thing is that because people don't know what NFTs are, it's very easy to get public faces to be like, sure, I'll put my name on this, whatever.
At least that's better than the Boss Tone singer being at an anti-vax rally.
God.
Yeah, so fuck Boss Tones. we support Skatoo Network.
Yes.
I bought one of their physical CDs the other day because I didn't realize that my record store had physical CDs for them, but That's cool. Support your independent artists, you know?
Yeah.
That's a big deal with music right now, is Neil Young taking his music off Spotify as a form of protest. Which, like, shouts out to Neil Young.
Yeah.
Shouts out to that whole movement. It's Spotify has a huge market share. The big problem is that they don't pay artists money when they clearly have enough money, because they can spend it on a certain podcast that rhymes with the Bro Hogan deteriorance.
which ironically is a perfect explanation of that podcast as well.
Yeah. The best thing to come out of this, though, so far, which won't be the best thing until Spotify renegotiates it, is that we might get a collab between Cake and Eve Six.
Jesus Christ.
So that's cool.
Oh, also fuck Gumroad. Gumroad is a popular, I think, comics hosting website that's like, Gumroad is no longer doing it, but like there was like a CEO or someone who was really deep into doing NFTs and was really fighting about it.
Something about that for Kickstarter as well?
I don't know about Kickstarter.
The blockchain? Or were they just using vague keywords like Web3?
Probably a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah. So,
anyway.
That's enough of the Doomer Corner.
Yes.
We are going to go into
the Gloomer Corner.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is Jerma's Who Will Replace Me video in stream. This was the other best, longest front runner I mentioned.
Yes.
Jerma is like the Nathan Fielder of Twitch streamers, because Jerma can do this like event where he does like a talent show slash like reality show of people going to be the next Jerma after he retires. And I can't tell how much of it was planned in advance or not. I don't know if these people like came in for like, you know, just like off of the street or whatever. Or not off the street, but you know, if these were like random people who spur of the moment did the things they did. Or if there was a discussion of like, oh, you're going to do this, and then you're going to have to do this while you're doing this segment, and then it'll be funny. But it was really good. I don't want to spoil too much of the end, but it was kind of incredible, especially Stir's acting in it. Stir did a very good job. Also, Dr. Shamoixen returned, and he did a great job as well.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so
thank you, Jerma. Yes. I just want to say thank you, Jerma, for everything.
Yes. Check out Jerma's Who Will Replace Me stream. It was fantastic.
This is not a best longest, but I do want to go into a little highlight as well, because a cool little itch.io game came out recently.
Ooh.
So speaking of Sony, and speaking of Bloodborne, there was a project, a single person project. I wish that I had her name written down. I believe she her. Basically, Bloodborne PSX. It is a PlayStation 1 demake of the first few hours of Bloodborne. Now, when I say PlayStation 1 demake, because I have actually played a bit of this, what I mean is that you cannot use the analog sticks on your controller. You control the camera with the L2 and R2 buttons. You move with the D-pad.
Yeah.
It uses all the face buttons, and your R1 and L1 are your attacks. Like, it is full, absolute, wonderful, built-from-the-ground-up demake. It is, like, perfectly in sync with the style of Bloodborne, but it plays radically differently, because, obviously, it is... Oh man, it translates so well too. Like, Bloodborne is probably my favorite FromSoft game, but like, and it is dark and it is grotesque and it is wonderful, but like the PSX style, like the thick fog that it has adds like a massive foreboding that I honestly think the base game doesn't even like have to that same extent. Like, it is so well done.
You know, you reminded me, I can't remember who I was watching. I think it was an Ace Their Aesthetics video, but they had talked about how it's interesting there's no N64 horror games. It's all PS1 horror games, as in like new games being made in the style of old consoles.
Yeah.
And it's like the mix of like the rendering tricks, like the fog from Silent Hill, in like the kind of wobbliness of the PS1's rendering of models.
Yes.
How like kind of unspecific it would be at times in the way the textures are. Like it just lends itself better in a way that is hard to really describe than the N64, even though those were like two consoles at the same era.
Yeah. The
and I guess also it helps that Resident Evil was PS1.
Yeah, the PS1 and Silent Hill was
in Clock Tower, I think.
I won't say the PS1 was defined by horror, but horror for a good while, survival horror was defined by the PS1.
Yeah,
yeah. Also, small shout out to Kira, Akuma Kira, the creator of Spooky's Mansion of Jump Scares.
Spooky's Jump Scare Mansion.
Yeah. That's the one. Who put out an emulator horror game. It's called Basilisk. It's it was like apparently made like very in a very short amount of time, and it's not like exceptionally complicated or anything, but like it is such a cool idea because you boot it up like it's a normal emulator and it has like the folders for ROMs and
that's
stuff.
Cool.
Like, it has the readmes, and the way you play the game is you load save states.
That's cool.
Like, it is such a cool fucking idea.
I love sort of avant-garde new game ideas like that. Kind of reminds me of Capsule Silence, the Onomatoguchi video game. That was similar, where it was like a failed prototype for an RPG, but if you use console commands, you can enter the like dev area where every dev had like their own little room, and
that's such a good idea.
Also, it was a Onomatoguchi's album released in the game, and you had to collect songs. It was pretty good. I love stuff like that. I love that sort of weird format screw.
Yeah. I'm going to call this corner the Itchy and I don't know a good itch.io joke that can use Itchy and Scratchy.
Itchy and Steamy. Because I want to talk about a game that's on Steam that I've been playing, and it's another very small indie game that's $3.
Itchy, I like this name. I'm looking over at our lawyers are nodding. Okay, go
okay,
on.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I want to talk about Vampire Survivors, which is the new Twitch meta, to be fair. I think I saw Northern Lion play it first, and then like everybody started playing it. Like you got Mango, Ludwig, Seagull even, if you've heard of Seagull. But so it is a top-down roguelite bullet hell game, though there aren't really bullets, it's all enemies, where it's very Castlevania-inspired, especially the art style of, like, the GBA games and the DS games, where you just kind of, your only actual controls are to walk around on a 2D plane, and your attacks will automatically fire with different rules and variations depending on what items you have. You start with one weapon, and you kill enemies, you level up from killing enemies, those let you get more weapons, you can hold up to 6 weapons and 6 passive items, weapons can evolve, etc., etc. But, so it is, for one thing, you get a ton of enemies on screen, and unless you have like a pretty tight build that's able to handle a lot of enemies, you will probably die. It is a game that tests how well you can kite enemies around. It is fairly difficult until you've like unlocked a lot of the meta progression and leveled up your characters a lot, because there is like roguelite, rogue legacy type meta progression. But like, I call it like a popcorn game. Not in that it is like, I don't want to say it's lacking substance, but the core of the game is a lot of enemies spawn, and your goal is to instantly blow up as many enemies as you can, making a lot of visual and sound effects happen. It is sort of a flashing lights warning, of course, because of that. But like, so like, you know, maybe like 15 minutes into a run can last at most 30 minutes. You will just get to a point where every enemy is dying in one hit because you've gotten so strong from leveling up and the enemies haven't scaled quite much yet. And so you'll just walk around mowing through enemies, and it's kind of mindless at times, but in like a therapeutic way. It's like the video game version of Bubble Wrap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of play Maple Story for a similar reason. I like just mowing down enemies sometimes in a way that's like kind of low input complexity, low decision complexity. And this game really scratches that itch. It's also really easy to get into one more run mode where you lose and or you win and you immediately go, okay, one more. And then like 20 minutes pass and you're like, all right, one more.
It's because a run can last at most 30 minutes and because a wave lasts 1 minute real time, it's very easy to be like, you die on minute 11 and you go, oh, you know what? If I had built that just slightly differently, I easily could have made it to minute 12.
Exactly. It is, as it stands right now, there's like, it feels like there is a best build and the characters aren't necessarily different enough to reward, like, trying for different things unless you're interested in, like, experimenting with builds for experiment's sake, which I certainly am at times. But the devs are actively updating it. It only has, like, two maps, but they're hopefully adding more. You can't even fight Dracula yet. You gotta fight Dracula.
Or you need to at least be his son, not Alucard.
There is a not Alucard, and he throws fireballs.
His name is Acrid.
I actually don't remember what his name is, but you did remind me that Risk of Rain 2 announced a new survivor for their DLC coming up.
Oh, interesting.
It's the Railgunner.
Interesting.
It has a scope.
That is, wow, hang on.
Yeah.
That's weird.
There aren't any Risk of Rain 2 characters that have like a zoom in, I'm pretty sure.
Sniping's a good job, mate.
Yep, exactly. There's also a mini ARG they did during the reveal that got cracked pretty quickly.
Makes sense.
I don't even remember what the reward was. I think it was a teaser for another survivor, which is like Acrid 2. Just another Void character.
What if it was just actually the sequel to Acrid?
Yeah.
Not a different character, just like older Acrid.
Yeah. No, that's the heretic, because when you play Acrid, your goal is to become the heretic. Sorry to all Acrid fans out there. Just every time I play Acrid, or one of my friends plays Acrid, it's like, ooh, okay, you know, Visions of Heresy, very good item, I want that. Ooh, but you know, Hooks of Heresy, that's also really good, I should get that too. And it's like, well, okay, Strides of Heresy, whatever the R ability is, I might as well get those. And oops, I'm not playing Acrid anymore. It's a good game.
Good game.
Good game. So, should we talk about a good game, I guess? In quotation marks.
Yeah, good game in quotation marks is a really good way of describing it.
Yes. So, Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yu-Gi-Oh! Whoa, whoa,
so,
whoa.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel released recently, and it is a digital, like, online official client for Yu-Gi-Oh! For one thing, I'm surprised it is more free-to-play friendly than Magic Arena.
Yeah.
Once again, another digital card game is more friendly for free-to-play players than Magic, which is very sad to me. Especially weird with Yu-Gi-Oh! Because Konami is famously Konami.
Konami is probably most well-known for being Konami, and thus probably the worst.
Yeah. Or as Yu-Gi-Oh! Players call it, Ko-Money. I call it No-Money, because that's what I'm spending on this game. I have like two full decks already, without spending any money on it, and I don't plan on spending money on it.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Like, okay. So, I am a good point for, like, someone who knows of Yu-Gi-Oh!, played it as a child, and never played it again. I want to reference, like, I want to give a point of reference of how much they give you. Obviously, you get a starting deck. Sure. Makes sense. There's a solo mode that most, like, it basically runs you through a bunch of different archetypes, which is very fun, but a lot of them, not all of them, but I think, like, 80% of them give you an entire other deck. All of them can be dismantled. There's, like, three...
Actually, no, not... The cards you get from the decks in those solo modes can't be dismantled.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's a little upsetting, but there's, like, three, basically, starter packs... starter purchases, which is like, it gets you one staple card or three staple cards, depending.
One.
I thought one of them gave you three copies.
Oh, did it? I don't know.
I don't remember what it was. But it gets you a staple card and 10 packs. And usually you're going to probably be buying these things in 10 packs.
Yes, because that guarantees an ultra rare.
Yeah. And like, there's three of those. So that is 80 times 3, 240 right out the gate. Of just random cards, which is just random cards. But then the big trick is you get secret packs, quote unquote. which are like just basically they are your they give you a full 10 packs if you buy the 10. And of each pack, which has 8 cards, 4 of them are going to be random cards, 4 of them are going to be the specific archetype. So if you find one archetype you like, or that sounds interesting, you purchase those, instantly you've got 40 of those types of cards.
Yes.
Then there's dismantling, which the game is a little more stingy on, like, literally handing you the actual material, but, like, obviously anything can be dismantled, and it's pretty much a 3-to-1. So, like, it's not at all hard, especially because, like you said, there's one guaranteed ultra rare, but, like, I have gotten multiple ultra rares, and I think every single 10 that I've dropped.
Also, if you get foils, those count as, like, 1.5, so 15 of the crafting material for that rarity instead of 10.
Yeah.
So if you get foils, those are more. You can also, get foils from crafting randomly, so that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And, they also give you a lot of the free, well, not a lot, but a pretty good amount of the free resources for just doing battles and getting the battle pass, which you can also get with just the in-game currency gems.
Yeah.
The battle pass is pretty cheap. I was able to buy the 3 secret packs and the battle pass before I did my first PvP match.
Same. Yeah.
Also, I know when it started, there's a thing where if you log in on the PS4, you get a bunch of free gems. I don't know if that's still going on, and I haven't really wanted to mess with, like, account transfers, because I don't know how much of a pain that would be.
Yeah, from my understanding, the account transfer is kind of a pain in the ass, but, like, you get enough without doing that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this is finally my chance in my platform to talk about Yu-Gi-Oh's design.
Yes.
This is something that I've wanted to talk about for a long time in a quote-unquote official capacity. So, we mentioned archetypes. I really, really want to talk about archetypes as a concept. I feel like this is the most misunderstood thing about Yu-Gi-Oh! From non-players. Players understand these. So, in most card games, archetypes are things that are constructed with the intention that, like, this is a guideline for how to play the cards. So, in something like Magic, for example, this is, like, red-white aggro, or black-white tokens, or blue-black self-mill. Where these are usually things that will be used if you're only playing with cards from that set, so if you're doing, like, draft. But in a lot of card games, these archetypes are non-specific in that they refer to game mechanics but not specific cards. So, like, if I have, a card like Prized Amalgam from Shadows Over Innistrad, which is meant to be used in Shadows Over Innistrad's, like, blue-black zombies archetype, but it just so happens that since that card says, like, if a creature came into play from the graveyard this turn, put it into play as well, I can combine that with a card like Bloodghast from Worldwake, which says, like, when you play a land card, return Bloodghast from your graveyard to play. And I can combine that with a card like Life from the Loam, which is the one that, like, you put 3 cards from your deck into your graveyard to put it into your hand, and then you can use that to get land cards from your graveyard to your hand. Like, these are 3 cards from 3 different sets for 3 different archetypes, quote-unquote. But because they don't refer to specific cards, you can mix and match them. And that gives Magic a lot of longevity through its, like, legacy formats, they call it. Because cards from many years apart can suddenly combine in new and interesting ways. So there's a lot of room for creativity that way. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is specific with its archetypes in that every archetype has a name, and a lot of cards of that archetype will only refer to cards of that name. Some of them are a bit more varied, like Elemental Hero Stratos says to add a hero card from your deck to your hand, but that could be a Destiny Hero, Elemental Hero, or a Destiny Hero, there's another one I'm forgetting, but but then you'll have stuff like, is it Constellar Ptolemy, that says, like, add a Constellar monster from your deck to your hand, or, you'll have stuff like that where it specifically references a card from that archetype, or like Shadal Hedgehog, which is flip, add a Shadal monster from your deck to your hand. And so what this means is that decks are kind of pre-constructed to an extent. There are a lot of archetypes that can be combined in weird ways, like invoked Shadal Dogmatica, because they all care about fusion monsters. But you'll have stuff like Synchron, where just because one card cares about summoning a bunch of Synchrons from your deck, it kind of means that you'll likely have a deck mainly consisting of Synchrons. And I don't think this is a bad thing. I think of this as a different style of game that I actually think is cool and would be cool to replicate in a game that isn't Yu-Gi-Oh! Because it's like a fighting game.
Yeah.
When you play a fighting game, you're not expecting to mix and match moves, but like every character has a clearly defined playstyle that interacts with their character design and like graphic design and animations and personality to give a clearer understanding of the character as a whole. In Yu-Gi-Oh!, oftentimes the purpose of the archetype or the goal of the archetype, and from like a mechanical sense, reflects the aesthetics of the archetype. So like you have something like Generator, which is an archetype built around summoning boss monsters, and the theme is it's like Norse gods, and so they're very big and scary, but also it's like RPG classes, and so they're like RPG bosses.
I do have to say, just to interject briefly, like, the imagination of Yu-Gi-Oh! Cannot be understated.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love so many of the different random archetypes, like, archetypes and archetype cards and bullshit. Just, it's the kind of, like, childish awesomeness, you know, of, like, I summon Girgia, which, you know, can Xyz summon with another Girgia to become a bigger fucking mech. And, you know, I take this fucking race car with eyes and this driller with eyes and make it into a mech with eyes.
Yeah, you have a lot of those things where it's like something really silly and cartoony. I love, what is it, like, Live Performer and Evil Performer, which are, like, idols, except some of them are evil idols.
Oh, my God.
Yes, that is a real archetype.
I can't wait for the VTuber archetype.
They're sort of like that. No, then you just have to play, is it Y Schwartz that has a Hololive set? I'm pretty sure Y Schwartz has a Hololive set.
Also, is it actually Magic?
Yes, sorry. I would love to see a Niv-Mizzet VTuber.
Oh, yes!
Who's like, I am so smart.
Oh, my. Okay, Niv-Mizzet VTuber, played by Cracking the Cryptic.
Yes. And we get a W Pentomino that adds up to 45. And of course, here's a secret. The digits 1 to 9 add up to 45. It's a secret I only tell my friends. And putting the 9 there gives us a 9 for this domino. And that forces this to be a 1-2 pair.
God.
This is my Cracking the Cryptic bit. But no, yeah. So I love I also love the boss monster, filler monster dichotomy. So Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a combo game, which is another way it's like a fighting game, yeah. In that combos are small steps that Rube Goldberg-like add up to one giant goal. In Yu-Gi-Oh!'s case, it's like you play like three monsters that are very weak by themselves, but they let you get out a boss monster who does a big thing and has big attack and is hard to kill. And I love that dichotomy for like a weird way. It's like, instead of resources like mana or money or credits or whatever, Yu-Gi-Oh! Just has other cards. But it ends up making it this weird, like, you have the little tiny baby cards and then you have the big powerful ones, which is often represented in the archetypes themselves. It's just really interesting to me because of how different it is.
Yeah.
Not much is really like Yu-Gi-Oh! In terms of its, like, combo focus and dichotomy system. Maybe Pokemon TCG, but I haven't played it a whole lot to know. I just, like I said, I think it's just neat.
Yeah. I think you definitely also hit on, when you say, like, sort of decks that are almost pre-constructed for you, that is so, like, useful for a baby idiot like me.
Yeah.
Who, like, like, all I need to know if I want to make a new deck is just, like, okay, they have the same keyword, they search for roughly the same thing, I got it, and I've got a perfectly acceptable mid-level deck. If I want to go high level, I have to deal with other bullshit, but, like, the level that I play, perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's like in Magic, it's like, I got a Goblin Guide. I love Goblin Guide. What deck should I build with Goblin Guide? And you have to look up, like, decks with Goblin Guide. And it's like, you've got Burn, Zoo, Goblins, like, other random aggro decks. And it's like, oh, cool. But in Yu-Gi-Oh! It's like, you Google, like, Hieratic deck. And then it's like, Hieratic deck. And you're like, ah, yes, the Hieratic deck. It's so easy to get into a new deck as far as, like, looking up a list. Just because, like, you know exactly what to Google.
I also have to say,
Oh, and I just did want to say that the secret packs are a genius way of incorporating this. And I think that's genuinely one of, the best ideas in Master Duel, is secret packs.
Yeah. I also do have to say I appreciate the bonus packs, which are random rewards that they give you two cards, but they're cards from basically the series history.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just sort of throwing a bone to idiots like me where it's like, hey, do you remember Mystical Elf? And I'm like, oh, I remember Mystical Elf.
Yeah. Sometimes they're more recent cards, but most of the time they're like the shitty dumb fuck cards nobody cares about.
Yeah. I do have to say, before I get to the mechanical thing I was going to say, I had said this before off camera, but I miss the old Yu-Gi-Oh! Art style. Like, I would love for there to be, like, just some random person to make, like, a 150 card custom card game that is just, like, that style, because, like, it is so weird.
Yeah.
And, like, it's weird in a very specific way. Like, you know, the new ones are weird and cool. The old cards are, like, weird and creepy and are really, like, intensely interesting. I remember staring at these cards as a child because they were so, like, strangely grotesque and, like, deeply shadowed. It's like if All Might was a Lovecraftian horror.
Yeah, it's like, it's like Magic cards early on are, like, Lord of the Rings illustrations. And, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards are, like, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark illustrations.
Yeah.
It's, like, they're what parents would have banned because of, like, it looking satanic. But it came after Magic had that whole satanic panic going on, so nobody cared.
Despite the fact that, like, your average Magic card is, like, a shit-ass elf with a beard.
Yeah, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Is, like, Witch of the Black Forest, Magician of Faith.
Man-eater bug.
Dark hole is rad, though. I do love the, like, earthbound battle backgrounds in a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh cards from the old days. It's just, like, a random gradient. It almost looks like a Magic eye poster.
You know what I wonder? Like, so, like, Magic has the thinnest veneer of the idea of, like, when you go into the battle, it is, you are two summoners summoning monsters to do your bidding. That doesn't hold up to even the slightest amount of scrutiny, but you know what? It's something you can print on one of the cards. Does Yu-Gi-Oh! Have that?
So, I mean, it had the anime where it was like, you're summoning monsters.
Yeah.
So here's the interesting thing about Yu-Gi-Oh! Lore. It's not like Magic lore. Or even, like, Android Netrunner has lore being told through this card somewhat. But it doesn't have a lot of stories, except there are sets that have stories, but they're not a one continuous story.
There's plane hopping.
Yeah,
it's just sort of like, this is the set from the Matriarch's dimension.
So, yeah, it's like, you've got some cards that have, like, a storyline between a bunch of sets, like the Goblin storyline, with, like, Upstart Goblin falling into despair because he spends all his money or something. But then you have, like, the Duel Links storyline, or was it Duel Links? There was this, like, I don't think it's Duel Links. I don't remember what it was called, but there was, like, a kiosk in, I think, just parts of Japan that would print out cards that you could then play a video game on the kiosk, like an arcade machine. but the video game was just Yu-Gi-Oh. But the archetypes in that had a storyline. That's where I think like Digusto and Vylon were from. And eventually that became Evil Swarm. And it was basically just like a bigger fish villain plot, like Dragon Ball Z, where like these monsters fought because they were angry at each other. But then a worse villain came and the monsters had to band together. But when they beat that villain, a worse monster came. So there's some storylines. Some archetypes are kind of connected together in other ways. But for the most part, there's not a huge storyline on like, you know, like a plot. Yeah. Level, they do have like background lore.
Yeah,
like this is sort of the setting that takes place that would have spawned these monsters, but what they do once they've been created is up to you, the player. It's like Dark Souls.
Shout out to the best lore, Fisher King Salmon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shout out to I don't really know any funny Yu-Gi-Oh lore. I do know the funny Yu-Gi-Oh card, Yu-Gi-Oh Friendship, which is now in my inventory and I cannot dismantle it.
Yes! The friendship card.
Yu-Gi-Oh Friendship. Shake your opponent's hand.
Through the screen.
I really want to play it just to see what it actually looks like, but I don't want to put it in my deck.
Oh, man.
We're just gonna have to play with each other until I draw it.
Exactly.
That'll be the Yu-Gi-Oh friendship marathon stream.
You have to create a really inefficient 60 card deck. Mm-hmm. And then we stream until we get it.
Yeah.
Also, fuck. Okay. Back to mechanics.
Yes.
So as someone who fell out, obviously, like, you know, when you say synchro summon, I go synchro what? But like, having now gotten a basic understanding of all of it, that scene is very funny to me, because synchro summoning is probably the easiest of any of the new things.
Yeah.
Like, I can explain all of the mechanics. Okay. Synchro summoning. It's basically fusion, except that generally speaking, one of the monsters needs to be a tuner. And you have to exactly match the attributed monster's levels. So if it's 6, you have to have a level 4 and a level 2, or 2 level 3s, etc. Xyz summoning, it'll have, you know, 2 level 4 monsters, and that just means you have 2 level 4 monsters on the field, you put them under the Xyz monster, and it'll pretty much always have a thing where you can detach it to have a one-time pretty powerful effect. Ritual summoning is still ritual summoning. I think it's just from the extra deck now.
No, rituals are still in the main deck.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Did not know that. Link summoning, little bit weird. You basically tribute monsters and you put them in a new zone called the Link Zone.
The extra monster zone.
Yeah, the extra monster zone, which is in between the two fields, and then you can, like, They have arrows that point where you can then link summon things to those new arrows. They're not super difficult. It's just they're strange. And pendulum summoning can go to hell.
Yeah, pendulum summoning is every pendulum monster has 2 arrows on it, which with a number on them, and that is their pendulum scale number. You put one of them on the left side of your spell and trap board, on the other one on the right side of your spell and trap board. And that forms your pendulum scale. You can then pendulum summon any number of monsters from your hand or pendulum monsters from your extra deck that equal or that are levels between the pendulum scale numbers. Now, when I say pendulum monster from your extra deck, that is because when pendulum monsters leave the field, instead of going to the graveyard, they go to the extra deck face up, where you can then pendulum summon them using pendulum summoning.
And it's important that they're face up, because various cards have banished from the extra deck face down.
Well, that's because some cards can be banished face down, but not face up. And it's not that you banish extra deck cards face down. Like, it's that once they leave the extra deck, they stay face down. Okay. So your opponent doesn't know what they are, but you do.
Ah.
Which is important for archetypes like Virtual World, which return cards from banished to your deck. Also, what was I going to say? I feel like there was something else I was going to mention in that whole tirade. But
a lot of things have effects if they are in the pendulum.
Oh, I was going to say, Link summoning used to be a lot more confusing, because it used to be that you could only special summon further extra deck monsters into a zone your Link Summon monster points to, meaning you couldn't Synchro Summon or Fusion Summon or Xyz Summon unless there was a Link monster already in play.
Oh, that's stupid.
Which basically
stupid.
Just means that the only decks that mattered were the ones that could get Links out, because, you know, if you've already got one Link out, why would you bother doing something else when you could just get another one?
That's so stupid.
The only exception being Synchros, I think, just because of one Link monster called Crystron Hal Quifferbrax. Don't bother. But so, yeah, nowadays that's ignored, so you don't have to play any Link monsters in your deck if you don't want. But you can still put an extra deck monster into the extra deck zone if you do want.
Pendulum summoning sucks.
Yeah.
I have had it explained to me multiple times, including now, and I'm still just like, I don't want to actively think about any of this.
Yeah, what's worse is that every pendulum monster has two text boxes.
Yeah.
A monster text box and a pendulum text box, which looks like a spell card. Like, except you just have to read two text boxes. And this is already a big problem with Yu-Gi-Oh! Is that their text is tiny. It is like a legitimate accessibility issue for the paper game.
Yeah.
The digital version has, you know, the full window to the left where you can read it in your favorite font. But
Helvetica Standard.
Mm-hmm. That's my favorite anime.
But
oh yeah, also don't forget that Xyz monsters have a rank and Link Summons monsters have a link number, which are different from levels. And so cards that care about levels of monsters don't really affect Xyz or Links because they don't have levels. I did mechanics-wise want to clear a sort of talk about a sort of misconception of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah.
Which is a lot like a misconception of fighting games.
Go on.
So to further make this comparison, people complain about Yu-Gi-Oh! Combos the same way they complain about fighting game combos. Like, why do I just want to watch my opponent beat me up? No self-respecting fighting game has unbreakable combos that do full damage and will lose the game if you get hit once. I say self-respecting because people don't really respect Hokuto no Ken, Fight for the Future, whatever it's called. The HNK game that has the basketball combos. Like, people do those, but I think it's pretty well known to be a kusoge, as the fun, as the fans call it. But Yu-Gi-Oh! Has disruption, and the metagame is built around disrupting your opponent's combos, and whether needing to pack disruption is good design is really hard to say, because, like, if you say people shouldn't have to put in cards that negate the opponent's combo just so they don't die in one turn, I guess that's fair, but that's also like saying that, you know, the opponent shouldn't have to use counterplay options that are available to counter something. Like, the opponent shouldn't have to block your opponent's attacks.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, I
can kind of get it when the cards are so ubiquitous. But at the same time, that does mean there's roughly 12 to 15 cards that you can craft in Master Duel that can go in almost any deck, which means that for a new player, if you build those staples, you will have an edge up when you try to build another deck.
Yeah.
Those being Ash Blossom, Nibiru, Maxi, Infinite Impermanence, and Forbidden Droplet.
Just gonna take a mental note of the timestamp here so that I can come back to that. And remember to make those.
Yeah.
I played against a tier 1 deck. Specifically, my friend made a tier 1 deck because he was, like, really high up. And it's... The thing is that it is not impossible to negate the combos that you pull off with it. It's just that when you get to... When you're playing against a mid-range deck like I do, it feels like all the negation is ultimately fruitless.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like... You know, I play Trap Tricks, which has a whole lot of trap hole bullshit, and it's fun. It is a lot of negation, but the specific deck that I played against deals with negation very well, and that's not like that is in a sense basically a weakness on my deck's part that I can't deal with the negation, but it kind of like it's annoying when your opponent's deck combos into a card that is like. And now you can't play, and I can just beat you down.
Yeah.
But, like, at the same time, that is, like, high level Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, that is, like, I play Yu-Gi-Oh! For a living and need to have the best possible deck in the meta Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah.
You know? The level that you'll be playing at in Master Duel is at worst, like, very mid-range for a good while, at the very least. And, like, that is where I want to play.
Yeah.
Like, that is where I have the most fun.
Yeah. So, that is the thing, is, like, not every high-level deck is a combo deck. There are a lot of mid-range decks that try to, like, put out some creatures with some powerful negation. There's at least two control decks, one of which is, like, a prison deck that doesn't like your opponent to play anything, and the other is, like, a spell-slinging control deck. So there's two flavors of control decks. And then, yeah, you have your combo and your what-have-you, obviously. But I think of it like bursting in a fighting game. Like, a big part of something like Blaze Blue or Guilty Gear is knowing when in the opponent's combo to burst. And just like that in Yu-Gi-Oh!, it's about knowing when in the opponent's combo to use your negation or your hand trap or whatever. And it's also about just building your deck so that you can, you know, draw those hand traps and negations and what have you.
Yeah.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Sometimes feels like it needed instant speed stuff more often, because just like sometimes you don't have enough time to place a trap card on the field before your opponent combos off. Like, the prevalence of these long turn one combos that get out like two monsters kind of necessitated that they printed these hand traps, which in something like Magic would just be an instant. But now that they're out, like, you can use them in whatever deck. You don't have to spend blue mana or anything. So it's not like if you're playing, you know, fucking like Drytron, you're out of luck.
Yeah. I feel like really the hurdle is just deck construction. Like, the hurdle is deck construction for new players. Like, the mechanics are, you know, not, like, there are some mechanics that are confusing, but, like, they aren't that confusing if you understand the basics of Yu-Gi-Oh! If you understand fusion summoning, you can basically understand, like, most of the ones that matter. Yeah. I do not include pendulum summoning on that list. Still hate pendulum summoning.
Yeah.
But, like, once you have that understanding, you know, you don't have to build your deck from the ground up. There's a lot of work that's already been done for you if you want to look up a really good deck that, you know, suits your play style.
There is nothing wrong with net decking.
Exactly.
I think I've about talked about Yu-Gi-Oh! As much as I could.
Yeah, I do. I will say, I was a little surprised. Only a little. I'm a little surprised that Banish is not as permanent as even Exile and Magic. Like, Magic already has things that play from Exile, but, like, there is usually kind of a state where, like, it is exiled and for good.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I was surprised that Banish is, like, its own pool. I feel like the life of a card game is, like, set one has Destroy Monster, set two has rebirth this monster, set three has, you know, set seven has Exile, set 21 has rip up this card so it can never come back, and then set 22 has tape the card back together.
The definitely removed from play zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, though, like, only some archetypes actually care about Banish like that. Like, really, right now it's just Virtual World, as far as I understand. In a lot of archetypes, it is permanently remove.
Yeah.
Like, there's an archetype called Eldritch, which is a prison deck that's really hard to deal with because the main boss monster keeps coming back from the grave. And so the only way you can permanently deal with it is to banish it. And, like, for that deck, it is a consistent, like, you're fucked.
Yeah.
But I play Shadalls, and there is a monster that lets you get other monsters from the banish zone. And so for Shadalls, it's a bit different.
Yeah.
It's just like a matchup knowledge thing.
Skill
issue.
Do you have one standout match that you had that was really fun? Because I'd have one.
I've had a few. I had some really good games against a Dragon Maids deck. Where, like, we just kind of traded our boss monsters back and forth a lot, and it got really long. I had a game against an Eldritch where we almost decked out, which was really funny. I just kind of ran out of answers, and they ran out of, like, problems until the very end.
I had a game against a hero deck. I think it was Elemental Hero. It might have just been Hero. But the interesting thing was that they played Slifer, not for a beat stick, but for his control to minus 2,000, and if it goes to zero, minus 2,000 attack from every monster that enters on your opponent's side. If it goes to zero, kill it. And like, that was really interesting because, like, there was a moment where he definitely could have killed me, but I had four traps that he didn't know wouldn't have done anything, but, like, he still couldn't swing out.
Mm-hmm.
And I got down to 700 before I managed to get out my big beat stick and, like, just slowly chip away at everything until I could finally swing face at him and, like, deal with him. And it was the best comeback I've had in the game, and it was very, very satisfying.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. I've had a lot of good games with Subterror where, like, I've just slowly chipped away at my opponent's resource until they had, like, 100 life and one card in hand, and I was able to kill them.
I exclusively like to play Beatdown. I like to be like, no, your life points aren't a resource, they're life points, bitch. Punch.
See, I like playing Control in Yu-Gi-Oh! Because it's not what you're supposed to do. Sometimes it feels that way. One of my favorite decks in Yu-Gi-Oh! History was Chain Garden, which was basically there's two monsters that you can remove them from play and then they return to the field at the end of the turn, which normally that's okay. There's like one of them's like 1600 attack, the other's like 1800. It's not super great right now. But then there's Black Garden, which halves the attack of all monsters that are normal or special summoned when they come into play. But returning to play is not the same as normal summon or special summon. So your opponent plays their like 3k attacker, it becomes 1500, in comes your wind-up rabbit, punches it in the face, and then if they try to kill the wind-up rabbit, you just slide it over to the banish zone until the end of the turn and it comes back. It's so good. It was just a deck that was not supposed to work, and like it played Yu-Gi-Oh! Not by Yu-Gi-Oh!'s rules.
Oh, God.
And I would love to make it if it wasn't for the fact that I am working on building a Synchron deck in Master Duel, and that is taking up all of my resources. But maybe one of these days I'll just play Chain Garden. The shitty deck.
I don't know what my next deck is going to be, but I am going to make it a pure beatdown deck, just because I like me beatdowns.
I like me beatdown.
I like me beatdowns.
I like me beatdown. Trap Tricks. Oi, SpongeBob, come into my office and play Yu-Gi-Oh! With me.
Oi, SpongeBob, me boy.
SpongeBob.
Me opponent has drawn into his Raigeki and will now destroy me entire board.
Today's the day I defeat you, Krabs. I've constructed the ultimate meta deck, Tri-Brigade Lyrilusk. Today you shall fall by my hands.
But Plankton, you seem to have forgotten that I've summoned El Shaddoll Winda, who only lets you special summon once per turn. I.
Krabs, no! You've shut down my whole deck!
Plankton, maybe you should have played more removal in your deck.
Hey, Squidward, what do you think of my deck? This deck is just 40 Kingfisher Salmon. You can't even have 40 of the same card in the deck.
Hey, Squidward, what do you think of my deck?
Patrick, that's two planks of wood.
I thought we were building a deck.
Insert the image of Patrick with the board nailed to his head.
Squidward just plays like meta decks, but he never draws into his hand trap, so he always gets blown up.
Oh, God.
That seems like it's a good time to end. We've sufficiently deteriorated.
Yeah, thank you for listening to Much Talk like Surfer Bro Show. Hogan.
Yes, thanks for listening. You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a rating, give us a comment, give us a review, let us know how we're doing. We love the feedback, we love the engagement, as it were. You can also, of course, follow us on Twitter, where you can send us those similar types of messages. And also, you can see teasers for our upcoming episodes. I put up a few for our next three episodes, see if you can guess what they are. Even I don't know what they are, even though I'm the one who posted them. I just blindly tapped on the keyboard and said, this looks good.
Yeah, that's actually how we do our episodes. We backfill them. We post the teasers first, and then it's like Disco Ball, Kiss, Eggplant, oh dear.
Yeah, it's like in how this is a reference nobody will care about, but with puzzle hunts, they often have the like the meta puzzles answers, and then they come up with puzzles to give you those answers. So they do it in like downwards order. It's like that, but with emojis. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. I tweet when I go live on my stream or when I post things, when I make content. I stream on twitch.tv/twack. twitch.tv/twak. That's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m., give or take. The Wednesdays I've been taking to work on a video that is taking a bit more longer than I should have expected, but it'll be out soon. And with that, hand it over to you.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter and TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWLS0N. I post my hot takes and sometimes videos. I'd like to be followed by something that's not a bot. I've been followed by a whole lot of bots recently. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. I do have some small video projects in the works, so hopefully that'll get posted sometime soon. And if you want to follow me on Twitch, it's at Machine Gun Vampire. I don't know that I'll be streaming anytime soon, but, you know, if I do, then you'll know when I'm live. With that, I've been Galen.
And I've been Matt.
And this has been your morning edition of the Talk Surfer Show News.
So much snow. I have to drive in this. Fuck.